This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. Stand by, Murfreesboro. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
Good morning. The time right now is 8:11. Aaron Yeldell from Middle Tennessee Medical Center is with us this morning, along with Patsy Weiler, who is a historian, also with us today. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
And I understand, Patsy, you've got some interesting information for us on the history of Middle Tennessee Medical Center.
Well, we're sure going to have a lot of fun talking about it this morning.
What? So start us off. What year did Middle Tennessee Medical Center first start?
Well, it opened its doors to an actual hospital in the spring of 1927.
And that was the old location, Bell Street at Highland or
yes,
Highland Avenue?
Yes, yes, of course. You know that that the new one opened in 2010, so it had a long history at being in the center of town at the corner of Bell and Highland, and long before it moved over to its new location. So it continued a huge legacy when it moved.
Now, you put together a whole book on this. What made you want to do it?
Well, the hospital was at an exciting crossroads at that time, and realizing that they had been there for 80 plus years, and so there's a tremendous amount of history, obviously, from the time that it was just a small building on a 3-acre it was actually been a cotton field, to growing to the point where they were exploding at the seams and we're going to have to move over to the new location where they are now. So the hospital felt like it was a wonderful time to commemorate their history, but also to celebrate their future. And that was the direction that we had before us, was to commemorate and to celebrate.
When the hospital first started, were they only on 3 acres? I mean, is that what they owned at the time in 1927?
Yes, it had been a cotton field previously. Some of your older listeners may remember Mr. Lassiter, who had been at the bank. He is in his very late 98 now. And he remembers as a very young lad actually riding his pony through that field.
Why that location? What made them want to pick that location over there around Bell Street and Highland? And what road was it on then? Was it on Highland?
Well, Highland was the... Aaron, I'm trying to think there. Let's have to answer the first part of your question. At that time, of course, Murfreesboro was built around the square. And the community was built there. That was the residential areas up and down East Main Street, going out Mainey, all through there. Actually, if you had made it all the way out to the university, you were in the hitherlands. You were out towards cornfields, a lot of growing land out there. So it was just natural for the hospital to want to locate in the center of the town, which was just a few blocks off of the courthouse.
And what road would that have been on?
Well, what's being torn down now, there off of Highland.
So it would have been on Highland Avenue, I guess.
Yes.
Interesting. But only three acres.
Excuse me, Highland University.
University.
One's on one side and one on the other.
But it was only 3 acres, and that's what they had all throughout the last...
Oh, no. That was just their beginning, Scott. They just put the historical part of the hospital there. That was where they started with the 3 acres. Keep in mind, this is 1927, just a few years before the Depression actually would start. This was a time where babies were still being born at home by lantern light, and doctors, some of them were still in, a few of them actually had to go out in the countryside on horseback because their Model Ts couldn't make those rutted roads. So you had people that were, as I said, delivering babies at home, and they were doing minor surgeries on the tables in their kitchens and homes and so forth. So few doctors had offices where they could do some inpatient surgeries in town. And if you were serious enough to go through that, then often a family member or a volunteer from the Women's Club would stay with a patient and they would recuperate there.
So what kind of surgeries would be done in 1927?
Minor things. It wasn't minor to the patient. But of course, it was very commonplace to have your tonsils taken out when you were 4 or 5 years old. It was just, whether they needed it or not, it was considered a healthful thing to do at that time. Of course, the birth of babies. If you had your baby in the hospital, it was a much more controlled, sterile environment than if you would have it out in a farm home somewhere.
And medicine was a lot more crude, obviously, than what it is today.
Well, yes, there were not as many. Medicine maybe was not as comfortable then as it is today. Procedures were much more invasive. But comparatively to what you may have had to have dealt with at taking care of someone in a home where there was not a lot of nursing, the poor mom or the aunts or whomever had just to come in and take care of the patient there. So you did have trained medical professionals, a sterile environment. And at the time that the hospital opened in 1927, it was the Cadillac of care.
So it was high tech back then.
It very much was. It was stainless steel. They had high quality, a lot of tile, a way to maintain cleanliness.
Patsy Weiler is our guest today, and she recently wrote a book on the MTMC, the hospital. The book is called A Time to Build, Middle Tennessee Medical Center. And A Time to Build Up, Middle Tennessee Medical Center. What are some of the stories that you uncovered in doing your research?
Let me first say that I want Aaron to join in here with me, because Aaron, this book would have not happened without Aaron's assistance, because she really helped us to have access to the archives. And I'd like to say too, before I answer your question, that I'd like to say hello to Susan Greer this morning, because actually it was her vision to see this book come to its fruition, and then asked me to come on board as the writer. So it actually, there was three of us that worked very hard. Susan is the owner of the Ride Impressions in downtown Murfreesboro. So Aaron, of all the stories, we shared a lot of like, oh my goshes and laughs and so forth. Anything that stands out in your mind this morning?
Well, I know in working with this, we spoke with Debbie Cope, who is on our foundation board of directors. And one of her stories that she can remember being very, very young is her younger sister being born, and was when her mother was brought home, then they didn't have ambulance services. So a lot of the patients were transferred home in funeral hearses. Mm-hmm. They were the only vehicles large enough to hold a stretcher. And so she remembered her mother being brought home in a hearse, and they had her little baby sister in a basket, and they wheeled her mother out of the hearse and you know, brought her inside. She had been in the hospital for probably about a week after delivering her baby sister. And so that was just a funny memory. She had some old home video footage of her mother being brought home in a hearse.
How long did newborns actually stay in the hospital back then, and how long did the mother have to stay in the hospital?
Well, of course, it depended on the needs of both the mother and the child, but I don't think it was an unusual stay for them to be there about a week or so, something like that. It actually wasn't until after World War II and that when a lot of physicians had served on the front lines and in MASH units and so forth, that they understood the importance of getting a patient up out of the bed quickly, getting them moving and keeping the circulation going and developing their strength and so forth. So prior to that time, patients stayed in bed much longer than they would have today. The thought of a patient having major surgery and that individual being up that evening or the next morning and maybe just taking a few steps but actually being ambulatory was something that came in after World War II, when those doctors came back, because they had to move those patients quickly in MASH units and saw how important it was to get their strength back. But so this would have been in the 50s, but still some of those patients would have stayed longer than we would today. It's, you know, mothers at their home the next day. We happened to have compliments of Debbie, a receipt from the Rutherford Hospital, and this was dated in 1951, and the bill for the hospital, and they even had the assistance of insurance from Blue Cross Blue Shield, was
$40. $40 for baby
hospital
being born.
Care. Now, I think that around $70 or $75 was the going rate for the care of nine months of obstetrical care. So still, that was just a little over $100.
Compared to today's times, it'd be what, about $5,000?
Oh, on a good day.
Interesting.
On a good day.
Now, you brought up major surgery. When I think of major surgery, I think of heart surgery or something along those lines. What was major surgery back then?
Well, anytime if I, of course, I'm not a doctor, and Aaron may want to address this too, but I think that anytime that you cut the body open, even if you just cut it on a piece of glass, you risk the invasion of any type of infection or germs. And so, well, let me say this. The late C.B. Arnett, who passed away in the last year and a half here, he was telling me that the physician that came down from St. Thomas to be one of the guest speakers actually was a leading edge surgeon in Nashville at that time. And CB's mother had a goiter around her neck, and that was considered very serious surgery. And she actually went into St. Thomas to have that done. And this would have been in the 20s at some time. And today, a goiter is not anything that would be high on our radar or something to worry about. But you have to remember that they didn't have all of the things that we have available to us. And I don't mean that as a cliche, but they didn't have the type of antibiotics. They didn't have the diagnostic equipment. They didn't have ultrasounds and MRIs and CAT scans. A lot of this was experience, hands-on knowledge, and knowing how the body reacted to certain things. Aaron gave me a copy of an interview of one of the very early nurses at the hospital in the 20s. I think it was at, I'm sorry, but I draw the name. We did more than 90 interviews on this book. But anyway, this early nurse was just talking about that in the 20s, late 20s there, they made their own solutions. In other words, they distilled and made their own saline solutions. They made their own glucose solutions. And those were the two main that they had, was sugar and salt. And the beds were a rubberized or a vulcanized mattresses, and they would take them, and the nurses would actually have to wash them down, scrub them down with alcohol and what they had to as a disinfectant. And they did one of the most natural disinfectants is that they would take the mattresses outside and put them in the bright sunlight to make them fresh and clean. So they did with what they knew to do, basically.
Of the 90 people you interviewed, what were some of the more unique stories you heard?
Oh, Scott, put me on the hot seat. That's kind of like asking a mother what her most favorite child is. I don't mean to punt your question, but I would say that each of these individuals had a very unique take of their experience. Of course, we covered more than 80 years, 82 years. And so that if for people that would be interested in the book, they'll see that we've somewhat broken it down into different eras. And depending on when you were associated with the hospital would be your type of memories. I think that the thing that stuck out in my mind was that the hospital meets people at a crossroads in their life, and we really don't think about that. With the exception of perhaps the university, there's no other institutional organization in this county that I would say top two or three there that touch the lives of so many people, and they touch them in such significant times, whether it was healing from a surgery or a bad wreck or the birth of a child or an illness. So these are things that stick in your mind. And so each of these people, I told each of these people have very specific memories. And I told Aaron, we didn't want this book to be just facts and figures, nor did Susan when we would talk about this, because hospital care is very personalized, and we wanted to tell the personal story. We didn't want a timeline. Aaron and I discussed it one day, and I said, this is a little bit of a stretch, I know, but I want to tell the story of the hospital as if we could walk up to the old entrance there on University Street and shake its hand and say, let's sit down and have a cup of tea this afternoon and tell me your story. And we told the story through the eyes of the people.
Now, you know, you mentioned the old entrance of the hospital. Uh-huh. There is some history there as well. It matches the same entrance of the old health department.
It does. That was that type of architectural style was very popular throughout the Southeast, kind of that revivalist type columns and a classic look. a lot of people don't know how significant the historical context of the hospital is, in that it was a gift to our community. And the actual seed money came from out of New York City, and they were the people that started our health department, and then they actually got the money to fund the building and opening of the hospital. And so New York was a far cry from Murfreesboro, even in 1927. So these people had exposure to the very best of the best. And if you read through their early diary entries and their early exchanges of letters, they made it quite clear that they wanted the very best of the best at the Murfreesboro Hospital.
So who owned the original hospital? Who was behind it?
Well, it was a gift to the city of Murfreesboro, but no, that's going to be misleading to people. It was a board of directors that oversaw the hospital. It was never owned. It was never Rutherford County Hospital. That's a misnomer. They think it was Rutherford Hospital, and it was the Harkness family out of New York. And I don't want to give away too much of this because we'd love for people to read the books and find out more about it. But this is in the time before World War II and before the introduction of a lot of the taxes that started. And so there was a lot more money, and these people did a lot more civic work. And so when the health department came down here, that the health department was an outgrowth of care that soldiers needed after World War I. After the Red Cross was so active in World War I, they turned their focus to the needs of soldiers coming home, and primarily in rural areas. And I mean, both city and rural areas, but of course we were a rural area. But there was a real emphasis on providing continuing health care for those needs. And so from that grew the need of communities actually needing a health department, a public health department. And from the needs of a public health department, this is kind of like the old mouse game, that the doctor and the nurses that would be at the health department saw that they could better serve the needs of our community if there was a small hospital that could do their lab work. Now, you think about this for a minute, Scott. You're feeling tired and run down, okay? So you want to run over to your doctor and you get a blood test. They want to see what your iron levels are. They want to see what your how your antibodies are reading, you know, your white blood count. There was no such bird. You know, there was no hospital to run over to. Or if you found somebody was really sick with a possible ruptured appendicitis on the future, too bad, too sad. Yeah, it was going to be done on the kitchen table, or it was going to be done in a local doctor's office. So as the health department saw all of these needs arise, keep in mind one doctor and an assistant and a group of nurses taking care of 600 square miles with the assistance of country doctors. And that's not to disparage the country doctors. They were very good at what they did. But think if that's all we had today to take care of us.
Yeah, it's kind of scary.
Yeah, it makes you real thankful, doesn't it?
So back in 1927, we had mm-hmm. the Rutherford Hospital. But how many hospitals do we have in nearby Nashville?
I'm sorry, I really can't address that question. Of course, there was St. Thomas.
Right.
St. Thomas is about 115 years old, Aaron, something like that. So you had St. Thomas was a main player there. And I'm sorry, but I don't know if Baptist was functioning at that point or not.
So would you have cases where somebody would check into the Rutherford Hospital and then they would be sent to St. Thomas?
Well, you know, I don't know. We never came across that in our research here. But let me back up on that. Dr. Ransom did a tremendous amount of groundbreaking research on the history of the physicians of the area. And he was a big asset as far as allowing me to interview him and giving me early insight on care when he was there. And in the 50s, when we were dealing with, excuse me, I have a frog this morning, with patients that were in iron lungs, he said that there was one at the hospital, but that kind of care was so serious that most of those cases would be taken on to Nashville. So they did work in tandem and continued to work in tandem with them as they grew.
When did the Rutherford Hospital become Middle Tennessee Medical Center?
Ooh, in the mid-80s.
So that wasn't too long ago.
No. almost 30 years ago. Doesn't seem like that long. No. Not to me, anyway.
So was it always Rutherford Hospital up until the mid-80s?
Right about the time before the transaction of the hospital selling to a joint operating organization of both Baptist and St. Thomas, the hospital did change its name to Middle Tennessee Medical Center, and that was to actually give a more comprehensive picture that the hospital from day one, its circles of care were spread out much farther than Rutherford County, because you would have people coming in from Cannon County and from all of our neighboring counties. We actually have a picture in the book of the roster. When Aaron and I were digging through the archives, we found this book, this huge, huge monster book. I don't know. Aaron was probably 3 feet wide at least, you think? Mm-hmm. And 2 feet tall, and it was of this heavy vellum paper, and it was actually a roster of the first day on up through, I don't know, 3 or 4 years of early admissions at the hospital. And even then, one of the early ones came in from Alabama, because if you were here visiting, you got sick, just like today. And we had a lot of MTSU opened in 1911, so we had students there that needed care, and if they couldn't take care of them there, of course, they'd bring them into the hospital.
Did you have a lot of students from MTSU who were going through the nursing program, or maybe they had a program for medical doctors? I don't know back then, but did you have a lot of them working at the Rutherford Hospital?
Well, I don't know the exact date that the hospital, that the nursing program started at MTSU, but I know that when Mr. Hastings was here, his wife was a part of the nursing program there, Art Hastings at MTSU, and so this would have been in the mid-80s, so I don't know how much farther it goes back than that. And the reason I say that is another little interesting twist that a lot of people, unless you were here in the 40s and 50s, really don't know, is that at one time there was a nurse's home that was located behind the hospital. It was like a two-story building, and then there were actually two buildings that were somewhat compressed together, and it looked like one big one. But in the early planning stages of the hospital, it was hoped that this would be a teaching hospital as well, as far as a hands-on nursing program. It never expanded to that. It didn't go that far. But what happened, it was a tremendous recruiting tool, and we have pictures of it in here as well, particularly in the 50s. Young nurses would come out of the of Memphis and other places, and they could come to they come to Murfreesboro. They had a place to live. They had a job. They didn't need a car, because they just went out their back door and walked over to the hospital. They took their meals either in the hospital or this was a home, an actual building with wasn't a dormitory. It was like a home with a living room and kitchen quarters. And so I talked to one of the nurses that was there in the 50s, and she said it was a tremendous recruiting tool, because just like today, you graduate from college, and most of us are not wearing dollar bills for earrings. So, they needed a place to live and a way place to get around. And there were a lot of nurses in the 40s and 50s and so forth that would come here and meet their future husbands. That's documented in the book too. I mean, this is a story about the hospital, but this is a story about people and their lives in Murfreesboro and how it all interacted with the hospital.
Patsy Weiler is our guest today. Give us the name of the book again.
It is called A Time to Build Up, Middle Tennessee Medical Center. And actually, Gordon Ferguson came up with that name, and it's drawn from Ecclesiastes in the Bible, and I believe it's the third chapter. I'd have to look in that seat. But it talks about the different seasons of life, and that when the hospital came to be in 1927, it was a time to build up. And so that's where the history behind the name. So Susan loved that name, Susan Greer, my partner in this project, and Aaron, and I think we all just immediately said, hospitals, even though there are times when people are so sick they don't survive in the hospital, but as a rule, the purpose of going to the hospital is to build yourself up.
When we come back, I want to know how religion played a role in the old hospital, Rutherford Hospital, and kind of compare that to today, how it how it actually plays a role in today's hospital.
Okay, well, we'll take a swing at it.
Right now, the time is 8:36. We're going to take a short break, but we will be right back.
Need a new car?
Why not a truck? How about a Ford F-150 from Ford of Murfreesboro? Right now, Ford is offering up to $6,000 in rebates on F-150s or 0% financing for up to 60 months for those who qualify. Head to Ford of Murfreesboro and test drive the latest Ford F-150.
$6,000 in rebates or 0% financing for up to 60 months for those who qualify.
Ford of Murfreesboro, on Broad at Northfield. FordofMurfreesboro.com.
WeatherEye.
For this afternoon, we should be seeing sunny skies with a southwest breeze, and our highs will be nearing 63. For tonight, we'll see increasing clouds with a chance of some rain showers and a low of 49. I'm WGNS meteorologist Greg Tatrow. Right now, it's 37.
At Todd's Complete Auto Care on Southeast Broad Street, we now have a European specialist on staff. Now you don't have to go to the dealer for service and repair on Mercedes, BMW, Volvo, Jaguar, and other Europeans. From oil changes to engine work, we can take care of it on foreign, domestic, and European vehicles. 962-9050.
Hello, I'm Greg Tidwell from Bell Jewelers. We carry the full line of Tag Heuer watches, all at 15% off every day. Our in-house watch technicians will replace the batteries and pressure test all Tag watches for half the price of other stores in our area. Bring it into Bell Jewelers.
Bell Jewelers on Broad Street in Murfreesboro, across from Toots. Family Staffing Solutions.
They've given me back a new life. There are truly people in this world that care about the elderly.
Family Staffing Solutions. Personal care assistance at its best.
This is not a high-pressure business. We want you to be very happy when you agree to do business with us.
That's Becky Buchner with Family Staffing Solutions.
When you need that help, it's there for the asking.
143 Uptown Square, 848-6774. Online at familystaffing.com.
WGNS Murfreesboro is true blue. Blue Raiders Sports on WGNS. FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, TV 11.
Good morning. The time right now is 8:38. You're listening to WGNS. Patsy Weiler is with us this morning. She wrote the book, A Time to Build Up, about Middle Tennessee Medical Center. And Aaron Yeldale is also with us from Middle Tennessee Medical Center. And before we went to the break, I asked the question, how did religion play a role in the old hospital, Rutherford Hospital? How did that play a role?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, that's a question that I presented to some of the older doctors. And because when the hospital actually sold to the Baptist in St. Thomas in the 80s, there was a lot of concern everywhere because, number one, it had not been done. A Baptist organization and a Catholic organization coming together to jointly manage a hospital. And I talked to one of the older nuns that was in the management team at that time. And oddly enough, Scott, it just wasn't a big deal. It just wasn't. Their faith was as much a part of their lives as breathing. And it wasn't something that they focused on. I had different people. In fact, the one thing I can't remember right now if they actually made it the book or if it was in my notes, because I have like two or three like hernia developing Rubbermaid tubs full of notebooks and pictures and files and so forth. And I asked her. I said, "Well, how did you deal with that?" And she said, "You know what? I always felt that the good people of Murfreesboro" were of the mindset that their focus is on providing good health for their community. And that's what it was. But I think if you talk with the majority of healthcare providers anywhere, it's very difficult to separate their faith away from their care, because if you're facing death or someone you know is critically ill, the majority of the people are going to pray for that person or focus on their faith and to give them strength during that difficult time. And so I think it's always been a part of Murfreesboro fabric, the churches, their faiths, and so that was just naturally interwoven into the care that was at Rutherford Hospital. And then that continued when Baptist and St. Thomas took over the hospital. I know that, now Aaron, you're going to have to help me here. Do you all still have available the crosses on the rooms? What came of that? Expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, we have crosses in every room. We have staff chaplains that are available 24/7 to go pray with patients and families, or they can call the family's pastor to come in. And so, you know, our chapel was built in the new hospital, was built as the centerpiece of the hospital. Then the hospital kind of circles out around the chapel. So faith is definitely a center point in our mission to care for the poor and the vulnerable, and to provide that care throughout the community as well, not just within the hospital doors.
So was there a chapel in the original hospital? Was there a prayer room or was there a chapel?
You know, we could look up the we actually had the blueprints. I found the blueprints in a magazine back in the 30s, a healthcare magazine, and I don't remember there being a specific chapel on that very early blueprints from the 20s. But once again, Scott, I think that that point in time, that it was kind of like chocolate cake and cocoa. You didn't exactly, they weren't sifted out. They were such a part of the fabric of the people of our community. All you're going to do is today is drive up and down East Main Street, and there's a church on every corner that... I feel like that they brought their church and they brought their faith and they brought their relationship, their personal relationship with their God right into the hospital with them. You know, they wanted to pray in the room for them. They did. They didn't necessarily need a specific place to go to. But it wasn't very much later, though, that I think that it actually developed into having a chapel. Well, I know that from... back in the 80s, there was actually a full-time chapel and added on staff. I mean, it was a staffed position there. And then now, how many are on staff? Do you know how many chaplains?
We have two on staff, and then we also have on-call that rotate. Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, I don't know that there was an actual chapel, a specific location. But I don't think that they saw the need for that, because I think they didn't... they didn't just deal with their faith in a specific room. It was a part of their life.
In writing the book, A Time to Build Up, what is the subject that stands out to you the most that affected people back in the 20s and 30s?
The lack of access to good quality health care. That I very much so. And in fact, the man who was a chairman of the board, S.B. Christie, who is considered, he was a... there were two or three of them that were just lions that moved to the community in the 20s to get the necessary need from the city and the county and the land and the funding and all. He had lost a daughter to a ruptured appendix, and she died from that.
Which is almost unheard of today.
Exactly. And as I say, it's very hard for any of us in any circumstances to take our shoes off and go back nearly 100 years and put those shoes on and walk in them with those people, because it's not within our mindset. But when I read their stories, I was just stunned. I mean, some of the early nurses, their interviews and accounts that we found in diaries talked about the gloves that the surgeons wore, that the very best ones without the holes were the ones that they tried to keep available for them. The ones that had holes in them, the nurses would actually sew them up and patch them, and they would soak them in a bleach solution.
When you say sew them up and patch them, what were these gloves made out of?
Oh, just like some type of a probably heavy cotton fabric or some type. I don't really know. But they were sewn up. I mean, we have an account where the nurse was talking about sewing a hole in a glove because it was worn.
What were some of the diseases that affected the folks at the hospital the most back in the 20s and 30s?
Oh, gee, Scott, I don't know. I didn't get my medical degree from from that time. But I think it was, as I said, they had their tonsils removed because tonsils were considered organ in your body that caught a lot of infection. And I was going to say maybe Aaron can look real quick on the first register here and we can see some of the things that... people were treated for. There were farming. I don't know about diseases, but there were farming accidents. There was the birth of babies. we had one caller in here one morning we talked to when the book first came out, that her parents ran a sawmill and she had long curls and she'd been over and got her hair caught in the gears of the sawmill. And, you know, just don't, I don't want to get too detailed early in the morning where people are around their tables, but, you know, it was a little gruesome. And, but, you know, so I think it was more accidents along those lines. Can you read, Aaron, what it's saying there on that, what they came in for?
I think that's the side of the page when they would come in to sign in. Oh. In this big book, which was right there in the lobby where people
for everybody
registered.
See. No HIPAA laws.
And you wrote your name, your occupation, your religion, your race. I mean, very detailed. And then you wrote what you were coming into the hospital for.
So kind of like the administration process today, only it's very secretive today.
Only much, yes. And then that's when they used to also, I think, publish it in the local papers.
Oh, yeah,
so
that's right.
Would know to.
So they would publish people's ailments in the local paper?
No, admissions.
Oh, everybody's name who was admitted to the hospital.
I have records that I came across where WGNS used to read them off about Sally Smith, Bob Jacks, whatever, you know, whatever the names are. You know, we're sending out our best wishes because they have been admitted to the hospital. And I interviewed a lot of the some of the older citizens in town that are now in their 80s, and they can remember their mothers sitting in their homes that were around the hospital. Keep in mind that this hospital was right in the middle of a community. It was a park setting. Kids played over there. We interviewed some of the early people that lived around the neighborhood, some of Christie's grandchildren and some other people, and they loved playing in that park over there and the trees and all the make-believe and crawling through the culverts. But what they would say that their mothers could see when an ambulance would come in. And
an ambulance being a hearse.
Well, that's right, because I know that the hearse was used to haul the babies home, but until... Oh, we'd have to look that up. But we had one of the first actual hospital-oriented and related ambulance services in the country. We were very far-reaching in that. And so the first director of the ambulance service is still there today. And so, yes, it was a hearse. In fact, we talked to Ewing Sellers, who's an attorney on the square, and he was just a teenager when the transition occurred from going from the funeral homes, carrying people to the hospital, to actually having an equipped ambulance. And in essence, before that time, you took people to the emergency room. Once you had an ambulance, you took the emergency room to the patient. That's the difference, and we don't ever look at it that way.
So you didn't have a real bona fide emergency room back then?
You did, but if you... Okay, Scott, let's say you were in a bad wreck, okay? Seriously injured. Well, the police would call the funeral home. Funeral home would come, pick you up, and they'd drive like a bat out of Hades to get you to the hospital. You know, it was a two-wheel drive to get you there as fast as it could. They had no... At best, they might have had a basic first aid course, but it was not required. Some of the funeral home employees just took it to kind of make themselves feel a little bit better. But and then they got you quickly as they could to the hospital. Now, if you were in that same bad wreck, the ambulance would bring the hospital to you. You would have a trained professional. You would have access to oxygen and IV lines and monitors and medicine. So that was, as the hospital developed its ambulance service, I thought it was a wonderful exhibit. I mean, an example of ambulances bringing the hospital to you. Prior to that, the hearses took you to the hospital. But anyway, Ewing told me that he remembers when they changed over to the ambulance service and they had these big boxy, clunky white boxes of ambulances because they had all this equipment in there. And he was laughing. He said, I remembered when I saw one of those kind of driving through town, lumbering through town, and I thought, if I ever get sick, I want one of the funeral guys to come in and get me in that hearse because they can drive like a bat out of, you can fill in the blank, and really get me there. I don't want them to take all day long in one of those slow, lumbering ambulances.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So why Murfreesboro? Why was this hospital developed in Murfreesboro? Out of all places. I mean, there wasn't one in Manchester. There wasn't one in Woodbury.
No.
Why here?
Well, I have often said, and I mean this seriously, it's almost like you could see the hand of Providence on this community. But part of why here is because we had some very aggressive, forward-looking people. During World War One, we had a very aggressive Red Cross unit here. Christie, S.B. Christie, was heavily involved with the Red Cross. And as I said earlier, once World War One was over, the Red Cross turned their focus on helping returning soldiers and also providing more community care. And they hired the first full-time Red Cross nurse. She only lasted about 3 months because of some health issues. Taking on 600 miles in a car by yourself is a big deal. And then so the other one came in. Her name was Maud Ferguson. And she got wind of the fact that in New York, as I talked about earlier, the Harkness family and their foundation was, they wanted to do, the purpose of their foundation was to do something for the welfare of mankind, i.e. a sign that hung over the hospital entrance on University Street for years. So they wanted to do that, and they were looking around the community, they were looking throughout the United States for rural, underserved areas that they needed health care. Well, Maud Ferguson was a mover and a shaker. I mean, you had to be a pretty gutsy gal to take that job on, and she got wind of it, that this was getting ready to happen across the United States, and she told Christie and some others, and they got on the stick, and they made application to have Murfreesboro reviewed, and they sent a representative down from New York, and all these stories are in the book. But they had, I mean, Murfreesboro has also been a wonderful hospitable area. We continue to be that way, but we have a great foundation to build on. Ms. Ferguson's diary tells us that Christie and some of the city leaders and she and others, they put the feed bag on in a big way over at the women's building, and had a big luncheon there. And also New York representative came down and looked all over the area, and then he met with the people in Nashville because they wanted to know that there was a bigger medical community on the state level that would help Murfreesboro. And the public health people in Nashville said yes, they'd be supportive of them. But what I'm getting at is that there were not public health departments at that time. There were only like five or six across the state, including your big ones in Nashville and Memphis and so forth. Well, Christie, if he was anything, he was not a fading flower. So right there at that big luncheon, you know, you've got the mayor and on the city council and all these people there trying to put the hurt on this representative from New York, make them feel wonderful. They're feeding them. He just says, okay, let's just take a vote here. We're going to start our own public health department. Wham, bam. And they voted it in. And that was the beginning of the foundation of the beginning of the public health department. And the people in New York were so impressed that this area could work together so well. I mean, how many times a day do we walk into a luncheon meeting and whoever's hosting stands up and said, we're just going to start a new foundation, folks, just right here, a whole new organization. But they did that. Christie was a very successful businessman, and it very much impressed the people from New York. The hospitality, the food, the Red Cross program they already had in place, and they won the nod. They got it. It was a demonstration, and the whole purpose of the health department, that they underwrote it for 5 years with the hope that the city and county would take it on eventually. Because a demonstration is to demonstrate to the people what good health practices were, and they went out and, I don't mean to be crude here early in the morning, but, you know, sometimes people didn't even have wooden latrines to go to. They just relieved themselves where they found themselves. And so they taught people about health. They taught people about hygiene. They taught people about diet. They taught people about the importance of inoculations. And so with all of that, that's when Dr. Mustard, who was the head of the health department, realized that a hospital would be a great thing to assist him in what he was trying to do. He already had a relationship with the Harkness family in New York. And so when they came down to visit to see how their money was being spent, he had a captive audience.
We got to take another break, but when we come back, we will tell you where you can find the book, A Time to Build Up, Middle Tennessee Medical Center by Patsy Weiler. We'll tell you where to find that in just a minute. Right now, the time is 8:55. You're listening to WGNS.
There is no safer place in the storm. Talk radio WGNS, Murfreesboro, FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, TV 11.
Family Staffing Solutions.
I do feel that I have been given the greatest gift. They have been over backwards to help me.
Family Staffing Solutions. Thinking about your parents. We can be there when you're not.
For the older people that have family members that are struggling with this, please understand, you only have to call this number.
Family Staffing Solutions, 848-6774, online at familystaffing.com.
Heritage South Community Credit Union now has a new home, 839 West College Street near Jennings Tire.
This is Darlene Robinson, branch manager. I invite you to visit us soon and find out what your community's credit union is all about. We offer free debit cards and great checking, plus exceptional rates on loans and savings. You can join if you live, work, worship, or attend school in Rutherford, Bedford, or Marshall County.
Heritage South Community Credit Union, new offices at 839 West College Street near Jennings Tire. Federally insured by the NCUA.
Maybe you need a new mattress. Well, you can look all you want, but you won't find anyone even close to the prices of mattresses at Bell Furniture. And these are Jameson mattresses. Listen, Perry Bell has the Jameson Marriott mattress, the one used in the hotel. If you check around, the queen-size set is $12.99, but at Bell Furniture, just $7.99. Bell Furniture, 1517 the New Nashville Highway, halfway between Murfreesboro and Smyrna.
Southeastern Tire of Murfreesboro has the right tires for your vehicle. Perhaps you're a rugged individual who enjoys off-roading. They have a tire for you. Or maybe you're a rap star driving around on 26-inch rims. They have a tire for that. You're a mom who's in the carpool lane daily. They have a tire for your minivan. Let's say you're a wealthy trial lawyer who drives a Lamborghini. Yes, they have a tire for you too. Maybe you drive one of those new electric vehicles. Hey, they have a tire for you. Southeastern Tire Service has a tire for every personality. They're on Broad Street, a tire or two away from Chevy of Murfreesboro.
American Radio's biggest voice.
You know who I am.
G. Gordon Liddy. Weekday mornings at 9 on the Good Neighbor Network. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro.
The time right now is 8:58. You're listening to WGNS. Temperature outside is holding at 38 degrees. Patsy Weiler is our guest today. She wrote the book, A Time to Build Up, Middle Tennessee Medical Center. Where can you find this book?
Oh, Erin, you want to take that one?
Sure. We have the book for sale at the hospital gift shop. And then we also have it for sale at the Right Impression, which is on the downtown Murfreesboro Square. And you can also go to mtmc.org/historybook. And there's some pictures there that aren't in the book, a few stories, more information about the book. And then you can also purchase it online through going to mtmc.org/historybook.
I bet this was a fun book to write, Patsy.
Yes, it was. It really was. And some of my close friends would call me or send me emails, and I took a little bit of gentle razzing. They would say, "Well, we haven't seen you in a long time," or "What are you doing? You want to go to your lunch?" or those kind of things. And I'd say, "No, I'm really busy," because we did the research and the interviews and turned it around, and Susan did a great job of editing it. And the archives were made very much available to us through the hospital. We did this in less than a year.
Wow.
Yes, we did.
You went through a lot of pictures and a lot of stories.
Yes, we did. We probably reviewed nearly 2,000 to 3,000 photos to boil it down to about 200. But
wow.
Yeah, my friends would call me and say, "Are you spending time with those dead folks again?"
Interesting yeah. Book, though. Patsy Weiler, yes. A Time to Build Up, Middle Tennessee Medical Center. The book is available now at the Middle Tennessee Medical Center gift shop.
Mm-hmm. And at the Right Impression. And this is also part of the Murfreesboro Bicentennial. January's Our Healers Month, so we wanted to recognize that.
Sounds great.
Scott, people should know that all the proceeds from the book actually do not go to Susan and I. They go to the foundation, the MTMC Foundation, to help with the many good things they do for the community.
Well, Erin, Patsy, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Right now the time is 9 o'clock. Local news comes your way next.